with you. 6:04 on the fan. Thank you, Erica. Thank you to Polly Rosenberg, who has departed. I think he hit the elevator 30 seconds after the top of the hour. Don't blame him. Don't blame him. Matt Casey, now in the chair. He's wearing a Knicks hat. Maybe 17's the lucky charm, Maddie. Number 17 might be the win. Pete Huffman also behind the glass. Do we have him with us? I got two thumbs up. Yay! I am just finishing my tweet about this person right now. Let me finish the tweet. There we go. Mark Feinsand from MLB Network, MLB.com, MLB period. My buddy Sandy. Mark Feinsand, it's Kim Jones, of course. How are you?
I am great, KJ. Very happy to be speaking with you tonight. How you doing?
I am terrific. I don't know when I felt better. I had a burrito at 3 o'clock, and I've been flying ever since.
So maybe at 3 o'clock you were doing better, but now you're still doing
no,
well.
The burrito has lasting power.
Hey, burritos can do that to you sometimes, you know?
It couldn't have been better. I do love a burrito. I really do. I can't help it.
There
and that
go.
Was a good one. That was a great one. Sandy, there is a lot of hand-wringing over the Yankees rotation here on the fan. I am not being critical of it. I tend to shade a little more optimistic, as in, oh, the Yankees will be okay type of thing. But where do you come down on the state of the Yankees rotation, and do you understand the fan who calls into the fan unhappy that it's not as complete as it could be, i.e. with Dallas Keuchel?
Yeah, I understand a little bit of trepidation about the rotation as a whole. I don't think that means they need to go sign Dallas Keuchel.
Okay.
You know, to me, I'm always a little skeptical when a team that has had great success with a player is perfectly happy to let that player walk away. And the Houston Astros have made no attempt whatsoever to bring back a guy who helped them win a World Series, who won a Cy Young Award, and to me that tells you something. He's
right.
In his early 30s. He's looking for, you know, a number of years, 4 years, 5 years, whatever the number may be. And those aren't contracts that most teams are giving out to guys in their early 30s at this point. So, you know, if you were willing to take a two-year deal, would I say go for it? Sure. But I don't think the Yankees are in a situation where they need to go out and give a guy like him $75 million. I think, you know, the Yankees are in a situation where they have a good rotation. I think they have a very competitive rotation that will put them in that, you know, sort of 95 to 100 win area if everybody stays healthy. And they also have the wherewithal that in July, if they need a starter, if somebody's hurt, if somebody's underperforming, they'll go and get one.
Yes. Yes. How would the, you know, 1 through 5 doesn't always matter. I certainly understand that. How do you think the Yankees rotation shakes out right now, though, 1 through 5? And do you buy into the idea, Tanaka, you could argue, has been on borrowed time for a while now, and he still is pitching, and he still is thriving for the most part. And Severino, if they thought he was tipping his pitches, you have to believe that's something they could fix going into this season. That's about
Correct.
7 questions in one, but you know, you can handle it.
Let me try to tackle them one
exactly.
by one. Severino, I think you're right. I mean, tipping pitches, we've seen pitchers where that's been an issue, and they've fixed it, they've addressed it, they've figured out what the flaws were, and I don't think that's going to be an issue this year.
Okay.
Tanaka's arm, to me, I mean, look, I was there the day that they had the, you know, we met him in Cleveland, and then they said, oh, there's a tear in the elbow and this and that. We were all like, oh, well, this arm is a ticking time bomb. I think that was like 4 years ago, maybe 5 at this point. So, you know, yeah, there might be a tear in the UCL. It also might be a 5% tear. We don't know. That's something we never knew. And I think it was obviously enough of an issue that Tanaka didn't opt out when he had a chance, because I think, you know, knowing that, you know, teams were going to want to see his medicals and want to see exactly what was in there, maybe he didn't think he was going to be able to get more money than he had coming to him from the Yankees. But that said, we also don't know that it is still a ticking time bomb to the point where any pitch could be his last, because I think you can say that with any pitcher at this point in the major leagues, where, you know, guys who have seemingly healthy elbows all of a sudden throw a pitch, they hear a pop, and they're out for a year. So I don't think Tanaka's in a much different situation than any of them. I think Tanaka's great. I think he's obviously shown himself to be a big game pitcher. The guy I'm obviously most interested in is James Paxton, mm-hmm. just because we haven't seen him outside of a couple times a year or watching him on TV. Obviously, he's got great stuff and, you know, big power pitcher and lefty and the whole thing, and he lets eagles land on his back, and he's a, you know, he's a very interesting guy. You know, so I think the Yankees rotation top to bottom is in pretty good shape. Hap, obviously, to me, is a very good number four. And Sabathia, you know, you're not looking at a guy who's going to be the 220 inning horse he once was. But if CC can go out there and give you 160 really good innings with the bullpen that they've put together, I don't have the concerns about the starting rotation right now that a lot of other people seem to have.
And Mark Feinsand, when do you think Jordan Montgomery should be ready to come back and help, whether he's in AAA or not, at least be available if they would need him?
Yeah, I mean, I would think sometime midseason, you know, All-Star break, I think, is probably the safe, kind of target date for that. If they need him, maybe he comes back a little sooner. If they don't, they let him go to AAA and, you know, get back into pitching shape. But again, I think we've seen before enough times that the Yankees, if they need to go get something at the deadline, they'll do it. You'll have some pitchers out there because you always do. And I don't know who those guys are going to be yet, because it's still obviously, 6 months from, or, you know, a little under five, 6 months from the trade deadline. And we haven't even gotten opening day or pitchers and catchers for that matter. But there will be guys out there. And the Yankees farm system, even with the trades they've made, is still pretty deep. And Brian Cashman has plenty of prospect capital from which to deal.
You know, I love the idea that pitchers and catchers haven't reported yet, but we're already talking about spring training. That's partly a function of the football season here, obviously, and frankly, the basketball season as well.
Right.
Yeah, we'll get to that because you were at the Knicks. Actually, let me get to that with you. You were with Clyde Frazier last night. You and Dina and the boys at the Knicks game looked like you had a fun time.
We did have a fun time. We try to go to about one or two games a year. I was just in the good fortune that my old friend Kenny Albert was calling the game last night, so we went down to see Kenny after
nice.
The game. Got to meet Clyde. Got to introduce my kids to Clyde. They were both enamored with his ring. And
nice.
And his suit, of course.
Because, yeah, of course.
You know, I mean, I was more enamored with the suit than I think the ring. But it was very cool. I'd never met Clyde before, and obviously as a big Knicks fan, that was quite a thrill. Fun night at the Garden. We got to witness some history with the 16th straight loss. And, you know, it's funny. As a fan, I think fans can probably appreciate this. You're sort of mixed in your head when you go there because, yeah, you want to sit there and root for your team. But at the same time, you know that it's in their best interest to lose as many games as possible. So it was really, you know, on TV, it's really easy to watch them and just say, oh, you hope they lose, or you just don't watch it. But when you're there, you want to cheer for your team. And so at least we get to see a good game, an exciting game. And, you know, in the grand scheme of things, the loss is probably better for the Knicks than anything else.
And your days of doing that, at least immediately, are coming to a close. I'm assuming at some point you will go to spring training, as will pitchers, catchers, and these teams eventually reporting, a week or so after the pitchers and catchers. My guess, and it's a guess, is that Gary Sanchez is primed for a rebound. Am I silly to think that? Am I naive to think that? Or do you partly or mostly agree with that?
I would mostly agree with that. I think offensively, he's certainly primed for a rebound. There are people who believe that he's the best hitter on the Yankees, people who know what they're talking about, you know, scouts and executives and people around the league who watch, you know, a lot of baseball mm-hmm. for a living and have been doing so for decades. There are a lot of people who think Gary Sanchez is the best pure hitter, both power and just pure hitting, on this team. So the idea that he's going to go out there and hit .180 again and be struggling all year, I just don't see it happening. You know, his defense is going to be a question, as it always will be, I think, until he proves otherwise. But, I would say that last year has to rank as sort of, if last year wasn't rock bottom, I'd be pretty surprised.
Sandy, I thought of you exactly to the minute a week ago, because it was right around that point when I saw Aaron Judge in Atlanta at the Super Bowl. What do you make of Judge, the outfield, the idea that fans think Bryce Harper would help, the Giancarlo, Stanton rebound year a little bit? Listen, he had good numbers. He failed in some big spots. So where are you with the Yankees outfield? And I haven't even mentioned Clint Frazier, Brett Gardner, Aaron Hicks, and the list goes on.
I'm sort of where the outfield, where I am with the rotation, and that I think it's good. I think you can win with the outfield you have. Would Bryce Harper make them better? Of course Bryce Harper would make them better. Bryce Harper would make any team better. But that's not to say the Yankees have to go out and get Bryce Harper. If Bryce Harper's price comes down or the years come down to the point where it makes sense for them to do it and they think it's something that, that they can fit not only into the payroll, but sort of with their overall plans. Remember, the payroll is where it is right now. But Aaron Judge is going to start making some real money soon. Luis Severino is going to start making some real money soon. Gary Sanchez is going to start making some real money soon. And if you think back to the Yankees dynasty, the Joe Torre dynasty, the biggest thing the Yankees had competitive advantage over other teams was not necessarily the ability to go sign big free agents. When they were winning, the biggest issue, the biggest thing they had was the ability to retain their own free agents, their own players, their own homegrown guys. Derek Jeter, $189 million. Brody Williams, here's a big contract. Tino Martinez, we're going to keep you around for 5 years. Paul O'Neill, all these guys, Pettit. You know, Pettit left once on his own accord, but they were able to keep Posada and Rivera and Jeter and all these guys for years. The same is going to go with Aaron Judge and Luis Severino and Gary Sanchez. So, you know, the Yankees don't want to have four other guys making $30 million apiece and then all of a sudden find themselves in a spot where, you know, they can't go pay these guys what they think they need to pay them. So would Bryce Harper help? Yes. Is the outfield good enough right now without him? Also, yes.
I still think the Yankee fan loves the idea that they're back to having at least partly/mostly homegrown Yankees, and that the generally speaking, the Yankee fan likes everything you just said about keeping their own guys, and they hope with the same results, of course, of that great group that you noted in terms of the Torre years.
Yeah, right up until the Red Sox win the World Series, and then they're not happy about anything.
I know.
Which, that's the way sports work, you know? I mean, that's as they should be. I understand why Yankee fans are antsy right now, and why they're saying, well, the Red Sox just won the World Series again for the fourth time since 2004, and blah, blah, blah. I get it all. But, you know, that's the way it works, and, you know, maybe the Yankees will figure out a way to overtake the Red Sox this year. I think they certainly have the team that can do it.
Well, and if the Red Sox somehow make it work without having a closer, really, as we sit here on, you know, February 10th or whatever it is.
Or a setup man, for that matter.
The whole package, basically. The bullpen for them has been, is gone.
That's been the biggest surprise of this entire offseason.
So what do they do?
It's a good question. I still think there's a better than 50% chance that Craig Kimbrell winds up back in Boston just because he's still sitting out there as well. And I'm not sure we're going to get any resolution to a lot of these big free agents, including Harper and Machado, for another 2, 3, 4 weeks.
Oh, my God.
I think these guys could go into mid-March. It really wouldn't surprise me at all. But, you know, Kimbrell, to me, teams have closers, teams who wanted closers. There were, you know, what surprised me was not that the Red Sox haven't re-signed Kimbrell, but it was that they did not sign Andrew Miller or David Robertson or Adam Ottavino or Zach Britton. One of those four guys I thought was a near lock to be in a Red Sox uniform this spring, and all four have moved on elsewhere. Two of them moved to the Yankees, Robertson obviously to the Phillies, Miller to the Cardinals, and I really thought, you know, the Red Sox are going to let Kimbrell walk, but they'll replace him with one of those four guys. And then even guys like Kelvin Herrera, Jairus Familia, I thought the Red Sox were going to pick up one of these sort of former or current closer types, and they haven't. So that's what leads me to believe that ultimately maybe Kimbrell goes back there on a one-year deal and tries to market again next year or something like that, because it just, you know, the Red Sox need a closer and Kimbrell needs a place to pitch.
The Red Sox should sign not only Kimbrell but Keuchel, and then the Yankee fan can call in here at WFAN and lose his mind for, you know, 6 weeks.
Yeah.
That'd be perfect.
I think Keuchel could wind up in Philly. Whether they get Machado or Harper or not, I think they could use another starter. They have plenty of money to spend. They're still $70, $75 million under the threshold. I think ultimately Keuchel makes a lot of sense in Philly.
I'm really curious what Brody's doing with the Mets. I'm really curious about it. He talks big. He has made some big moves, big signings. You dealt with him certainly covering baseball. He was an agent. Give me, you know, we have less than 2 minutes left, but give me your take on Brody, the Mets GM, knowing, you know, you and I both know Robbie Cano pretty well, and I think you would agree with me, he's not gonna wilt under the New York lights. I mean, that's one thing we know about Robbie Cano. But a minute on Brody.
I like what Brody's done. I think coming in to this offseason and being aggressive with the Cano deal, with the, you know, bringing in Edwin Diaz and making trades and signing a few of the other guys they brought in with Wilson Ramos. And, I liked the moves they made. I really did. I think this National League East is going to be a fascinating division this year. When you look at all the moves made by four teams.
Good. Good. That's good for business. That's good for excitement. I love that.
100%. And, you know, it's funny. The Braves sort of made the first big moves with Donaldson and McCann, and then have been quiet and watched the other three teams all maybe pass them. So,
you know,
but I think you could put all four of those teams in a hat, pick them out in any order, and you can make an argument that that's how the division is going to finish. So Brody's taking a team that obviously had some issues, and he's addressed some of the holes. I like the moves they've made. Will they work? I have no idea. I'm as big a Robbie Cano fan as there is, as you well know, and I think he's going to be very good here. If somehow the DH comes into play in the National League in the next 2 to 3 years,
well, then that's
then
a
I
complete
like that
win.
Deal even
yes.
better.
Less than 30 seconds, give me what you expect Cano to do. If you're speaking to a Mets fan group that wants to love this, what do you think Robbie can do?
Oh, I think he can be a 300 hitter with a 360, 370 on-base percentage with, 25 home runs and 100 RBIs and just be a really solid middle-of-the-order guy. He 35, 36,
yeah.
years, 36 years old? He's not done yet. You know, if you look at what he did...
He might be in the MVP conversation if he does that.
Look at his numbers when he came back from his suspension last year. He was every bit of the Robinson Cano that he had been for the years before that.
Great stuff, Mark Feinsand. I know you have some things to do this evening. I'm going to let you go, but you know I thank you for joining me. We'll do it again.
You got it, KJ.
Mark Feinsand, MLB Network, MLB.com. Good stuff. Listen, if he's right about Cano, Mets fans are going to be very happy this spring and summer, and maybe this fall. How about that one?